I'm Reinhard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 219, for the week starting 20 May 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, Duncan's local spa has a Bitcoin ATM.
It does indeed. Also this week, MTN to deploy LTE at 900 megahertz, and why that's important. The latest on the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill, DSTV to launch a streaming-only option, OpenView HD to get its own news channel, and Reinhard talks about Microsoft's new Xbox Adaptive Controller.
It's Sunday, our new time slot, and that means it's time to talk all things tech.
Welcome to the show. How's it, Reinhard?
All good, Duncan.
Very good, thanks. Live streaming again on a Sunday afternoon. It's significantly colder than it was last week when we were recording.
Oh, yeah, very much so. Winter is upon us.
Yes, winter is definitely here. So nice and warm in my studio here. I see you're kitted out there in a heavy jacket.
My little hoodie on, good thing you're not recording. I look very gangster today.
You look like Mark Zuckerberg. of course, if you want to join us when we live stream on a Sunday afternoon, usually around 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we'll tweet it out. You can now join us on live.techcentral.co.za. That's live.techcentral.co.za, where we have a chat box where you can chat to us and also listen to the show live. Whenever we're doing any live shows, please do join us there. You can also send us WhatsApp voice notes or WhatsApp messages on 071-999-1111. Please add that number to your phone, 071-999-1111. And we've received quite a few WhatsApp messages in the last week or so. Nice. So let's have a look at some of those. No voice notes this week, so please forgive me while I read these out. But someone said, let me see who someone is. Errol Gunn says, very sobering listening to the interview you did with MultiChoice. That's an interview I did about a week ago with Calvin Mawela, the CEO of MultiChoice. Very interesting discussion. He says, I predict they will be dead the minute they breach the 1,000 Rand per month mark for premium. I got an interesting SMS from DSTV to which I responded. Not sure if it was spam. They were offering premium for $5.99. I accepted, but nothing eventuated. Keep those interviews coming. Well, thanks, Errol. Yeah, MultiChoice DSTV premium for $5.99 a month almost certainly wasn't a genuine offer. I think it's around about $9.60 a month now if you take everything, including the PVR access fee. I think at $5.99 a month, DSTVs would almost certainly be losing money.
Licenses to pay.
They do, yeah, indeed. And we've got another message here. This one is from Tafadzwa, who I think sent us a message last week as well. He says, hi, guys. Did the influx of media boxes kill the HTPC? The user experience on the Apple TV is great, but the device is expensive. The Android boxes that have flooded the market are mostly cheap and nasty. I've tried three of them so far. Yeah, I can agree with that. Mm-hmm. The Mediator is no more. I didn't know the Mediator wasn't being sold anymore. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's been around for a while. That was a very popular unit. Best of both worlds. Gave you the power and capability of a PC, but with all the inputs for everything.
I loved my Mediator back in the day. It's kind of sad if it's not around anymore. But I suppose these cheap Android boxes have eroded the market, Apple TV as well.
It seems, I mean, it might just be the local importers that's not happening, but
it's a local company. Mediator was local. It was a South African business.
Okay. The website's very dated.
Is it still
European, they've got a .com, European details on the Netherlands, but the site looks like it's out of the 80s, so yeah, I don't think they're around.
Interesting. So Tafadzov says, why is no one talking about HTPCs anymore? I can't even remember what HTPC stood for, do you?
Home Theater PCs, I think it was.
Home Theater PC, okay.
Windows had a special edition version of its operating system for it as well. Fantastic concept, but everything was basically just reduced into an app and that kind of thing. You know, there's so many ways to get that functionality without building an HTPC.
Yeah.
A lot of fun back in the day to get all those formats to work together. Back before we had all the tools we have today, and YouTube and Netflix.
Yeah. So Tafadza carries on. He says, powerful small form factor devices such as the Intel NUC surely make a strong case for the revival of the HTPC, don't they? Quite possibly. What do you guys...
Sorry, go on.
He says, what do you guys use to consume media stored locally and in the cloud? Do you still have content stored locally? I still have my HP micro server. What do you use, Rehat, to watch on your TV?
To watch, sorry?
To watch content on your TV. What do you connect to your TV?
Oh, no, basically it's a computer. So I've got a computer just running a browser. So everything I consume is through a browser.
Mm-hmm.
It's most of the stuff that I do is streaming YouTube and Netflix on my big TV.
Yeah.
What I do on my PC, I mean, it's obviously, again, just streaming.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I've retired an old desktop PC. It's next to my TV. It makes a bit of noise sometimes, but it's fine. And I just use Chrome on Windows and stream through Netflix. What's nice about Chrome is you can create desktop apps in the browser. So you go to netflix.com, for example, and then you go to the settings menu and you say add to desktop, and you can just drag that icon onto the Windows taskbar to make it easily accessible. So I've got a whole range of icons on my task tray at the bottom of the screen for Netflix, for Amazon Prime Video, for YouTube, for Showmax, for Plex, for a whole range of video streaming options, and it works very well.
No, it does indeed. I've got an old notebook. I didn't use it for anything else. It's just sitting there. It's just running a browser. It's good enough for streaming. But the benefit of having a PC, you can do other things as well. So doing stuff like Spotify, okay, you've got apps for everything now, but what's nice about Spotify is you can control it from your phone. So again, it's running on my PC in the living room, on the TV, playing the music, and I can be anywhere in the house controlling on my phone. So, yeah, now we are at a time now where we can actually, where the stuff communicates well enough for us to be able to kind of hack these things easily.
Yeah.
But back in the PC days, it wasn't this easy.
Yeah, Tafaz was right there. The Android set-top boxes, many of them really are cheap and nasty. You probably want to try and avoid them if you can. There are a few good ones. I quite like the Roku boxes. Quest Play sells that now. But I like the freedom of having my own desktop operating system with a browser, because it allows me to do anything I want, and I'm not limited to the ecosystem that the vendors created and limited to being able to only watch through apps. If you've got a PC running Windows or Mac OS, you can do just about anything on your TV, which is fantastic. And what I have is a little Microsoft, I think it's called a Sculpt keyboard. It's a very light, portable, little curved keyboard. It weighs probably 100 grams, and that just sits on the coffee table with a mouse. And they're connected via Bluetooth to the PC. And you just put the little Bluetooth keyboard on your lap, and you type in whatever you want on screen, and you can do anything with it. I mean, you can play games, you can browse the internet, you can check your email on your TV if you want to. So it's a good solution. I know some people swear by the Mac Mini as a TV workstation computer, but the Mac Mini is quite expensive. You can get away with a much cheaper box. You can get a I think Tafadza mentioned HP Micro. I forget which model it was, and my phone has now switched itself off. But it's a good option. You can buy a nice 3,000, 4,000 Rand Core i3 PC, hook it up via HDMI to your TV, and Bob's your uncle. It works.
Yeah, definitely. Look, even on my Apple TV, I've got a few friends who use that very successfully. They obviously have the Apple ecosystem already running, so for them it's a good transition.
Apple TV is a nice product.
It is a nice product. Again, you know, with us trying to move away from uniformity and also just looking at various things talking to each other, it's certainly not the best option in that case. If you just want something that works all the time, Apple TV is the way to go. But if you want to experiment more and have access to maybe more variety of content that maybe not on the Apple TV yet,
yeah,
way to do it.
Yeah. So keep sending us WhatsApp messages. We love to hear from you. And if you can make them voice notes, we do appreciate that. It just adds the interactivity. 071-999-1111 is the number. But let's get into the show proper now, and let's get things started with our quiz. Rehat, do you want to do the first question?
Certainly. Which spa in Johannesburg now has a cryptocurrency ATM?
And how many subscribers did Vodacom add in the past year in South Africa?
Third question, FNB has debuted a new way of opening a bank account. What do you now do to open that account?
Oh, Oh, no. We'll get to that later. The CEO of Vodafone said this week he is stepping down after 10 years in the job. Who is he?
And the final question. The suspended CEO of Usasa, Lunko Mtinde, has lodged a complaint against his employer and its board. With which government agency?
And as always, we'll get to the answers at the end of the show. But let's jump into this week's news. And there's quite a bit to talk about. Including something which was, I must say, a little unexpected when I went up to visit my local spa this morning. Standing at the checkout point to pay, I look across and next to the cigarette counter. What do I see? What looks very much like an ATM with Bitcoin stamped on the front. So, of course, curiosity got the better of me immediately, and I went over there and took a photo of it. And the manager, excited, George is his name, excitedly came running over, and we made introductions. And turns out that George, who works 14 hours a day in the spa, these guys work incredibly hard, goes home and then spends another 3 hours trading in cryptocurrencies every day. So he's a huge...
Cool, man.
Huge fan of...
this is his passion project.
Crypto money. So he got hold of these guys. He got hold of these guys called Vendibit. And a guy called Daniel out here from Denmark, and he was in the store. So we had a chat for about 20 minutes about this machine. He showed me how it works, how you buy Bitcoin on it. He bought $50 worth of Bitcoin with a 50 Rand note, which he inserted into the machine. Pretty cool. So this is the Northwold Spa in Randburg. I would have expected them to put a Bitcoin machine maybe in Sandton or something. But kind of cool to see it at my local spa here in Randburg. And it's the second machine apparently these guys have installed. The first one they did about 4 years ago in Midrand, and Daniel was telling me that it was too early. They came to market too early. But when I was chatting to George, who runs the spa, he said since they put it in yesterday or the day before yesterday, 6 people have bought Bitcoin already using it.
Well, bits of Bitcoin. I'm sure they didn't buy whole, or did they buy whole Bitcoin?
No. You can buy in tiny transactions. I mean, in the demo, he put a $50 banknote in, and he got micro amount of Bitcoin.
I've got some notes in my pocket, almost like a novelty thing. But if I've got an actual Bitcoin account, it'd be like a very good way of saving, you know.
Yes.
Just putting the last bit of notes you have, the last bit of coins and stuff.
Yeah. But it was pretty cool to see it there, and there was so much interest. While I was chatting to this guy, shoppers were coming up and looking at the machine and asking questions, and so there's definitely a lot of interest. And Daniel said to me that this is about democratizing Bitcoin and taking away the mystique and the a lot of people think Bitcoin and then they don't go near it because this is too technically complicated. I'll never understand this. I can't.
I think they need a computer and big hardware to actually just have parts of it. Yeah.
So he showed me how it worked. You install an app on your phone, and then it reads a QR code, or you scan a QR code, and then that links into your Bitcoin wallet, and then you just put money in the machine, and it goes straight into your Bitcoin wallet.
Is it allowed to set up a Bitcoin wallet there as well if you don't have one? Because it's tough to do it via the app or something.
I'm sure that you can. I did ask, what about people who don't understand how this works? They really don't know what they're doing, and so is someone here going to be here to support them? So Daniel said, well, yes, George is here, who will be more than happy to help you, I'm sure. And there's a big sign, by the way, behind the machine in huge letters. It basically said, we don't take any responsibility if Bitcoin goes up or down. A big disclaimer behind, because I suppose they don't want people coming back and saying, oh, I just bought 10,000 rands of Bitcoin and now they're worth 1,000 rand. What have you done to me?
Yeah, fair enough. But I mean, I guess there's definitely a level of education needed, even if you just want to put in a few rands to test it out. You still need to understand the basics.
Yeah,
that's a good step, and it takes people with enthusiasm like that to just introduce it to their communities.
For sure. For sure. It was an interesting chat with Daniel. They're doing a press launch tomorrow, actually, at 10 or 11 in the morning. I'm not going to make it. I've got to go to Microsoft tomorrow. Quite interesting. So if you're in the area, or even if you aren't, it's worth popping into the Northwold Spa. My local spa. I might even see you there, since I'm often there almost every day.
You stop for selfies, Duncan, when fans see you in the street.
Luckily, I'm not that recognizable. but some excitement, and certainly last thing I expected to see at my local spa, to be honest.
Yeah. Very cool indeed.
And, the other thing I wanted to mention about it was, I was wondering how these guys make money. Was there a transaction fee? There's no transaction fee, but they obviously make money on the exchange rate. So the rate the exchange is set at. And Daniel was telling me that they have deliberately set the exchange so that it's more affordable than Luno.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. I'm definitely going to pop around there. I'm going to buy some of that. Invest some Bitcoin.
It's just fun, yeah. You could put $100 in the machine and forget about it, you know. It's just, although I think if you're going to start getting into Bitcoin seriously and start building up a significant reserve of crypto money, you should probably do some more reading about how you secure it and all that sort of thing, because hardware tokens and all this stuff, because you don't want to lose it. So do some reading.
What I'm quite interested in is there, and I haven't been able to find the answer, like a really good solution, but is there a good Windows-based app that allows you to just mine on the side while your PC is not doing anything?
I'm sure you can do it, yeah.
I'd be open to suggestions, because yeah. I have, there's something called GUI Mine or GUI Coin or something weird like that. Mm. It's not the kind of thing I'm looking for exactly. You remember what when your screensaver came on and you searched for Alien City?
Yes.
Looking for that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And then it just runs when your PC's idle.
Yeah. You just have to figure out whether it makes financial sense to do it, because obviously your electricity bill's going to go up and you're also going to...
It's not about money, Duncan. It's about just mining.
You just want to mine.
Well, I understand that side of it. Obviously, if your PC's running, it's going to cost electricity. But, yes. I've put that aside. That is... Yeah. Yes, I understand that, but I just want to. Because I want to use it as a benchmark too. I want to see if I compare, and I shouldn't be giving away my cool tricks here, but I want to test what the machine can benchmark, how many bitcoins it can benchmark in 24 hours.
Yeah.
Just use it as an ongoing benchmark with various devices.
All right. If you don't mind your PC sounding like a jet engine 24 hours a day, I'm sure it's cool.
That's why we got server rooms, Duncan.
Yeah.
But yes, you're right.
Yeah. But these days you can buy, you can actually rent space in data centers to mine Bitcoin.
Sure. Still way much more effort than just running it in your own PC. Well, I think it'll be a cool experiment.
Yeah. And it's winter now, so you get a free heater.
Exactly. That is the other benefit. I think Linus actually did a video on that, how to use your PC efficiently to heat your room in winter.
I'm sure it'll work very well running Bitcoin mining 24 hours a day, if you don't mind the noise of your fans spinning up. I went to Pretoria this week take part in a press conference with the Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services, Siyabonga Cwele. At GCIS in Pretoria. For some reason, they don't have dial-in facilities for these press conferences, which is really annoying, because driving all the way to Pretoria is a bit of a pain. But I went through there and managed to sneak in some lengthy questions, and it was quite interesting. He said that the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill updated draft, the one that will be presented to Cabinet, will only probably happen around August, so there's been a delay of a few months there. But what he said was quite interesting. He said that they're taking into consideration all of the inputs that were provided at the March Stakeholders Conference, which I also attended in Pretoria, where people like Shamil Jusup from Vodacom compared it to the mining charter, and many other organizations slammed various aspects of it, including what it plans to do around spectrum and possibly taking back spectrum licenses from the operators, etc. And he said in the press conference, in answer to one of my questions, that they are going to be taking these inputs very seriously, and it is basically their duty to consider the inputs from the public. By public, he means industry stakeholders. So possibly a positive development, but we'll have to wait and see what that draft looks like in August. He wouldn't give any hints as to what changes might be coming. He said it's too early for that, but I think the government might have actually been taken a bit aback at the level of robustness against the draft bill that came through.
Yeah.
So I guess not too much more to say on that. And we should probably take an ad break. We'll be back right after this.
Hello? I know you're there. Look, I can see the lights of the TV. Please, I just want to watch the finale. Come on, guys. I'll give you a foot massage or anything.
Time to get your own fiber? Speak to Vox. Because for a limited time period, you can save up to 3,000 Rand in installation costs. And we'll send a technician to help you get set up.
Hello?
Go to vox.co.za. Get fiber to your home. Get free installation and activation. Open the door to endless entertainment.
T's and C's apply.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Rehat?
Good, Duncan.
So, this is an interesting story. DStv is going to launch a streaming-only option. I suppose it was inevitable, right?
It wasn't inevitable. I'm surprised it came this late. I spoke this last week where I said they should have done this earlier, especially with the SuperSport thing, just to get ahead of all these issues that will undoubtedly creep up, and they'll have to go this way. But when is it launching?
Yeah, I mean, they're talking. It looks like it's going to be a 2019 thing based on my discussions with Calvin Mawela, the CEO. He said they'd be very lucky to have a product out by the end of this year. So probably, I'm guessing, but maybe first half of 2019. And they're busy with figuring out how it'll be priced, what it'll look like, and all that sort of thing. Now, of course, DStv already has something called DStv Now. Have you used DStv Now, Rehat?
When I cut the cord, they just launched DStv Box Office where you could rent. They didn't have the DStv Now option.
Okay. It's quite good, although it's gotten better. It had some streaming issues. It would cut out. It was as if they hadn't allocated enough bandwidth to it or something. So it had quite a few of those challenges. I haven't noticed that recently, so I think they've improved that a bit. But it's a nice product, but it just replicates the existing satellite channels online. I don't know if that's enough for a streaming-only product or whether a streaming-only product has to offer something else. I guess it would have to feature... Well, DStv Now, of course, has catch-up as well, which is more than... You get more content on the online version than you do on catch-up on the PVR. Does it need to offer... I don't know. I actually don't know what it should offer, but I do think it's going to have to be cheaper than the satellite version. Obviously, satellite is very expensive to distribute through. It's cheaper to distribute online, I think. I would imagine. I mean, putting a satellite up there is a very, very expensive proposition. I don't know how much cheaper it would be or could be. Maybe 60% of the price.
Look, they still have the infrastructure. They still have those big overheads, right? It's not they like do. They make the backend switch immediately. So even if they offer just broadcasting of live TV, live TV services, so I log in and I watch whatever's streaming live at that point, like they do on Mnet and all those other channels, I can see it working well if they just offer it. I'm sure it'll be cheaper to broadcast, yes. But yeah, it's going to be a bit of an uphill journey, I think, still.
Yeah, and it would be interesting to see if it's just one product or whether there's going to be a whole bouquet of products like we have on the satellite side of things. You know what would work incredibly well, and I don't know if they'll do it, is a SuperSport package online that offers nothing but the SuperSport channels. It would be hugely popular.
You know, I would actually sign up for that because I used to, when I had DStv, I enjoyed channel hopping. And some of the sports channels, especially some of the ESPN stuff that they started broadcasting, was quite interesting. You know, I'm not a massive sports fan. I don't watch everything. But there's definitely something nice about, you know, having a sport on when you're standing around having a few beers around the bright type of thing, right?
Yeah.
I can see value in having that content shown in my house on a regular basis because I also enjoy some of the odd sports too to watch. But I don't have access to that any other way. There's no way that I can subscribe to those things.
Even if...
Yeah, very well.
Even at $500 a month, I think they'd get a lot of sign-ups for the full bouquet of SuperSport channels if they provided an HD.
A lot of happy dads, a lot of disappointed kids because they'll lose out on all the other content.
Yes. All right, cut the Cartoon Network. We're going getting SuperSport only.
But a lot of people would do that.
They would. Yeah. I often hear it said that the main selling points for DSTV are SuperSport and the kids channels. The sport for dad and the kids channels, so that mom and dad can give the kids something to do while they go shopping or something.
But really, the package allows you to view separate channels in different rooms, because that was always a clash as well, right?
Yeah.
When sport is on, your kids can't watch the shows.
Well, with online, that's not an issue at all.
That's not an issue anymore, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Netflix, the amount of children's content on there is incredible. And they've got this beautiful kids overlay so that kids can only watch the kids' content.
How do you know this? You don't have kids?
No. I've got friends with kids.
Okay. You're not watching the kids' content yourself there, are you?
No. Well, I do watch some. No, actually, the stuff that I watch isn't kids' content. Might be cartoons, but I wouldn't call Rick and Morty kids' content.
No, definitely not. I think that's got an age restriction on it somehow.
Oh, yeah. But that's what makes that overlay great again. But yes, I mean, DSTV Go2 chap was out, I doubt.
Yeah. A SuperSport only streaming package would do incredibly well, but I don't know if they'll do it. It's so key to their proposition, and I think if there was a SuperSport only option, they could lose a lot of subscribers to the existing bouquets.
I don't know if MultiChoice still has this product available, but a few years ago they had the Walker, those mini screens.
Oh yes.
They also had a little remote receiver that you could connect to something. I can't remember how it all worked, but
it was DVBH. It was digital terrestrial television designed for small screens.
Yes, exactly. But I mean, they obviously put a lot of effort and money into that. I mean, that infrastructure, those devices couldn't have been cheap. So their thinking was in additional or new distribution methods, but I think they were thinking the wrong way. They didn't look at phones. Because everybody's got a phone, right? Why would I go spend money on an additional screen just to watch something that was the reception, which wasn't fantastic everywhere you went to begin with?
Mm. I think they're still running that network. I stand to be corrected, but you're right. It never really took off in a massive way.
But the money they put in there, they could have probably, I mean, hindsight is 2020, of course, but you know, imagine the effort that they put if they put that effort into a digital distribution network and build a solid back end for running all of their online services.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, from the digital streaming of the DSTV Go to the catch up.
Well, they're making those investments now, and those platforms are available and have improved. And of course, they now also own Showmax.
Yes.
I don't know if it's the same back end that they use. I suspect probably not. Probably not yet, anyway. But yeah, they've said they've clearly see streaming as the future. In fact, Calvin Mawela said to me that eventually DTH satellite is going to go away. He said that MultiChoice, if it doesn't innovate in the streaming space, will find itself in the same position that newspapers did when the internet came along. The World Wide Web came along. So they see this as an existential threat. They say if they don't innovate and they just stay as a satellite to home provider, then they are very real risk of being disintermediated and their business destroyed. I mean, he was using language like that. Mm. So they're taking it very seriously, and whatever they bring to market, I suspect, is going to be a strong product offering. But they do need to price it correctly. And sport, I think, is going to be key to how they package this.
And I mean, let's not forget the other players that's tried to come in. Yes, MultiChoice have got the big footprint already. But I mean, how many guys have come along with Black is the latest one? There's a few others that come and gone.
Mm.
I hope they look into these guys and see what failed there. Yes, like I said, they've got a big footprint, but that can't help you if you're back end and you're the product that you're offering isn't solid.
The key thing is content. I mean, that has to be the number one thing. Probably right behind that is being correctly priced. I think those are probably the two most important things. And then, of course, you've got to have a robust distribution platform. You can't have your product buffering all the time. You have to offer it in HD. You'll probably have to offer it in multiple resolutions because not the whole market will want to be watching in HD or can watch in HD. Your system has to be robust. But so it's content. I'd imagine it's content, pricing, and distribution. Get those things right, then you.
And Netflix, unfortunately, is a benchmark in all of those things. If you look at how it is able to perform really well on any device you play it. I mean, I use it on all of my devices for a period of months, you know, from my iPad to a desktop machine, and they all work fantastic. The way it picks up where you left off. These little things in the artwork are also changes.
Mm.
And the benchmark is very high now for them to actually, you know, come to the market with something that's really going to appeal to the end users.
Yeah.
But they work out for them, without a doubt.
For sure. For sure. So some other interesting news in the broadcasting market this week, OpenView HD, which is the free-to-air satellite distribution platform, part of the eMedia Investments stable, which also includes ENCA and ETV, announcing that there's now going to be a news channel on OpenView HD. It's not clear if it's going to be a 24-hour news channel at this stage. It's also only going to broadcast in SD at launch, with HD possibly coming later. But it adds a lot of value to that platform potentially. What's interesting is that ENCA is already part of the stable, and it's not ENCA that's going to be going on to OpenView HD. I think the reason for that is because DSTV has ENCA as an exclusive channel, and so their contract prohibits them, I think, from offering ENCA on other platforms, including its own OpenView HD platform. So in the press release that they sent out, they made it quite clear, and I think it's because of that agreement, that this channel will be developed by a separate editorial team. It will have its own separate management, and in fact its studios will be in Cape Town, not Johannesburg, where ENCA is headquartered. But it's interesting that these guys seeing an opportunity for another news channel. And the OpenView HD platform, given that it's free, is not bad at all. You just have to pay for a decoder and installation, and it's pretty cheap. I think the decoder is like 300 Rand or 400 Rand. You're not getting DSTV quality like channels on there, but you are getting more than you'd get through a free-to-air bunny aerials scenario where you just get the SABC and ETV. Here you're getting, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 channels. I haven't looked lately. And you're also getting all the ETV, SABC channels, plus movies channels, religious channels, a few other things, a couple of news services. So, beggars can't be choosers. At 0 Rand a month, it's not a bad offering. And now getting a news channel, which is quite interesting.
I think you're right. It adds a lot of credibility. And it can take them very far if they can get that right, I think.
Yeah. So they've had 1.2 million activations on OpenView HD, but they don't say how many of those are actually live viewers. Honestly, I have no idea. Is it half a million? Is it a million? I don't know. But 1.2 million activations.
I wonder how they start advertising without making those numbers available.
Well, I'm sure they make them available to advertisers, but it's not something OpenView HD is an interesting proposition. I think it's something that has the potential to shake up this market quite a bit. Hearing rumors that government may be looking at satellite distribution instead of going DTT now, nothing firmed up, but if that's the case, then OpenView HD is in a very powerful position.
Yeah.
Recha, you wanted to talk about Microsoft's new Xbox Adaptive Controller. I saw a headline about this during the week, but I didn't have a chance to read the story. It's quite significant, I believe.
Yeah, I think this is absolutely fantastic. We know Microsoft has been doing quite a bit with accessibility on their operating system for years now. So this is on the Xbox platform, and what they've basically done, and I don't know if you've seen photographs, it's well worth taking a look at it. For a lack of a better description, it almost looks like a mixing desk, two big black pads with some controller buttons on the side. What you may not see from the photograph is on the back, it's got an array of I/O options. All of it's based on 3.5 millimeter input connectors. And what this essentially allows you to do, or allow anybody to do, is to customize the input. So anybody with any type of disability can, with whatever input mechanism they have or that they've got to move or communicate, use that as input into the controller. for gambling. I mean, that's pretty much as simple as what it is. What you can also do is with this kit, you can set up a second Xbox controller to actually assist the assisted player, the accessibility requirement player, to play a game. So I can play with my nephew, for example, who requires, maybe can't move his arms in a certain way. I can move the controller up and down while he be able to shoot by pressing a button, if that kind of description is descriptive enough. It's a very cool project. I think just allowing the open-endedness of the inputs, meaning you can put any input into it. I think we're going to see some really cool adaptations of this technology and a lot more gamers, obviously, on the Xbox platform.
Is it just a tech concept at the stage, or is this actually a product that's coming to market soon?
No, it's going to be available at $99.
Oh, wow, they've got pricing already, okay.
Yeah, the pricing, I can't see availability, but I would imagine it's going to be out very, very soon, if it's not out already, because it's been in the hands of so many people already. There's a lot of videos on YouTube of this controller in use already. So it's very exciting stuff. I really like it. I'm really looking forward to seeing how people are using this.
Great. We'll include a link in the show notes if you want to go and have a look at photos of this thing. Richard, if you just add a URL to the show notes, that'd be great.
Sure.
Let's move on to our regular features, and we'll start with our winner and loser of the week. Our winner this week is Comsol, which is a Midrand-based wireless communications company that is deploying a 5G network in South Africa. They may be first to market with a commercial 5G network, although the mobile operators will be chasing them hard, I have no doubt. Mm-hmm. But they announced this week, and we broke the news through Tech Central, that Verizon, which is one of the biggest telecommunications companies in the world, they are headquartered in New York, and they operate one of the biggest wireless networks in the US, together with Samsung Electronics, are going to be assisting Comsol in deploying a 5G trial network in Johannesburg in the coming months. It's going to be live in the third quarter of this year, and they're going to be creating demonstration points in a public street where people will be able to go and play with 5G technology and see what it can do, which is going to be quite cool. They're going to create two base stations with gigabit, I think 10 gigs of bandwidth into each base station, and they're going to be using millimeter wave spectrum in the 28 gigahertz bands to prove the technology. They're also going to have live customers on the trial. And it's all going live in the next few months. They're going to be showcasing it at the big ITU Telecom World Conference, which is coming up in Durban later this year. And going to be quite a lot of excitement. But well done to Comsol for getting the backing of a telecommunications giant like Verizon, which hasn't been invested in this market for some time. Remember, they used to own UUNet, which I think eventually subsumed into MTN Business. So I do wonder if this is the start of Verizon possibly looking at the South African market again, showing some interest here. And, of course, Samsung, one of the biggest electronic companies in the world. They're talking about launching a commercial network by early next year, once the 5G standards have been more bedded down. So looking forward to hearing some more of that. So that's our winner this week, the guys at Comsol. And our loser this week is Sentech. I almost hate to pick on them because this is not their fault, but they're losing 150 million rand a year as the delays in digital migration stack up. That was the figure that was revealed this week by Siyabonga Kwele, the telecoms minister, in his press conference ahead of his budget speech in Parliament. And the 150 million rand a year is purely so that they can keep running an analog and a digital network at the same time in something that's known as dual illumination. So these terrible delays, partially government created, also broadcasting industry created, delays in digital migration is costing Sentech 150 million rand a year. And ultimately, it's costing us 150 million rand a year because Sentech is a state-owned company. So the Sentech, our loser this week, although it's not their fault, I should emphasize. What's your pick this week, Richard?
So I'm going to pick an additional feature to a product that we all love, Duncan, and it's Dropbox. They've got an extended version history feature. And the reason why I'm picking it is because this week it's really kind of saved me probably 3 days worth of work. Now, what this feature is, so for everybody who's on Dropbox, obviously this is an additional, you pay $4 extra for this, and what it does is it saves unlimited versions of each file that you store on Dropbox for a year. Now, it's helped me before quite a lot, but what I use Dropbox for a lot is to have live design files on. I've got a team of people working on these files. We all just collaborate on this Dropbox account. I don't have a business account. It's just my personal account. I've just got some shared folders. So with extended version history, what happened earlier this week, some files got deleted completely, and obviously it wiped everything. Mm. And we also had to go back and get previous versions because some of the files were overwritten. And it literally took me probably about 10 minutes just to select the files I wanted to, because you can see which files have been also been deleted. So you can just go in, find the files, undelete them, and within 5 minutes, everything is back to where they were. It's an absolutely fantastic feature. And the reason why I subscribed to it initially about 5 years ago, I think when I first got it, was for the very same reason. You know, if I have photographs on there and I edit them, or if I have working on files and I accidentally overwrite certain things, which do happen with me, you know, I kind of knew this would help. And this week was the prime example of that. If you have live files to work with, I would highly recommend it. Unlimited revisions of your files for up to a year. It's absolutely fantastic.
Great stuff. Great stuff. I must say, I haven't used Dropbox in quite a few years. I use OneDrive and Google Drive now. OneDrive because I get a terabyte of storage with my Office 365 subscription. And Google Drive, just because for some reason I've got a lot of storage on there. I'm not sure where it came from. I think it came from review phones that I got over the years, and they kept offering
me free. Don't expire as well.
They probably will eventually, but I've got about 300 gigs on Google Drive, and I haven't paid for it, so I just keep using it.
Yeah, I'm using about half a terabyte, and to be honest with you,
wow.
I'm hesitant to move to anybody else. Dropbox is just, you know, I get what I pay for,
and
I kind of. It's like you entrust the company. I just entrust their service more than others, I guess. The syncing to me is also much better across multiple devices.
Have they got local servers? What's the upload and download speed like on Dropbox compared to Google Drive, for example?
Look, on Fibre, it's absolutely fantastic. I can cap it. If I'm not busy with anything, it'll probably go full speed. Yeah. So I mean, if I look at the 100 meg line at the office, I usually upload 60, 70 megs, I think.
Okay, so they must have some sort of infrastructure here, even if it's through Akamai or someone like that.
I'm sure they must have some load.
Yeah.
But I would highly recommend it. I know the other service I've got, I also have a OneDrive subscription because it comes free with Office. But I don't know, Dropbox to me is, you know.
Yeah.
If it's not broken, don't fix it.
Once the local Microsoft Azure data centers are launched, I'm going to do some testing on OneDrive and see how it's improved, because it has historically been quite slow.
And how's it syncing and those additional features? You know, like, do they save versions of your files? You know,
Google Drive does, but I could be mistaken. I know that the Google applications do, so Docs and the spreadsheet and stuff. You can go back through revisions. I'm not sure if it works in the cloud drive storage service at all. Mm-hmm. I haven't checked.
Interesting. Yeah, open for suggestions if anybody wants to submit those.
Yeah, please do. 071-999-1111 is our number. My pick this week, and I'm always a bit reluctant to pick something that I haven't played for or used for a lot, but it is on special on Steam right now for 160 rand, so I thought I'd get in and pick it now in case anyone was keen to jump in. Normal price, I think, is around 450, if I remember. Yeah. And that's a game called Stellaris for Windows. It came out about 2 years ago, but it's had a major update. Which some people have criticized, and I must admit I haven't played the game enough yet to know if that criticism is justified, but it is a beautiful game, one of these space simulation strategy games, if you enjoy those, games like Homeworld and Elite and that sort of stuff. Stellaris, it's very good. It's 160 bucks on Steam at the moment. Just a disclaimer, I haven't played it exhaustively, only for an hour or two so far, but the graphics are absolutely stunning. And I love these space strategy games. They're good fun. And if I had the opportunity to do so, which I don't, I'd probably pick Frostpunk again, because I'm absolutely loving that game. I picked it last week. Absolutely great. Have you had a chance to play it yet, Rafa?
I bought it. It's sitting there. I just haven't. I'm still fixated on PUBG. It's the most frustrating game ever.
I think you'll just have to uninstall PUBG and and ban Steam from installing it again for a week or something.
Well, it's actually good because it's making me not game as much, because I play two or three games a day, and they don't last long. But by that time, I'm so frustrated, I just say, okay, I'm done, I'm going to go do work, go ride my bike or something.
Fire up Frostpunk, you'll really enjoy it.
I will definitely do it this week.
Cool, and I think that's our show. Apart from our quiz results, let me do the first question. Which spa in Johannesburg now has a cryptocurrency ATM? And the answer is Duncan's Spa. No, no, seriously. it is the Northwold Spa in Randburg.
And if we mention your name, what, do we get discount?
No, probably not.
Oh, okay, well worth trying.
I'll speak to George. He might help.
Second question. How many subscribers did Vodacom add in the past year in South Africa? And the answer is 4.5 million.
Yeah, very impressive number, actually. The earnings slightly missed, though, so the share price fell. FNB has debuted a new way of opening a bank account. What can you do now to open an account? And the answer is take a selfie.
Well, you don't seem to approve there, Duncan.
No, I don't. But it's quite cool tech. It's actually quite cool tech. It's linked to the new biometric system that the Department of Home Affairs has launched. I believe there's some pretty impressive security behind it, from a brief chat I had with someone at F&B. But it's all linked on the new Home Affairs biometric platform that was launched also this week. It's pretty cool. It's just the concept of taking a selfie to open a bank account that just doesn't really appeal to me.
No, for sure. But the innovation, at least somebody's driving something really cool.
Yeah, it's marketable. It's a marketable concept, let's put it that way.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Fourth question. The CEO of Vodafone said this week he's stepping down after 10 years in the job. Who is he? And the answer is Vittorio Colao.
And our last question this week, the suspended CEO of USASA, Lumkum Timde, has lodged a complaint against his employer and its board. With which government agency? And the answer is the Public Protector. And that situation's getting a bit messy. And that's our show for this week. As always, if you've got any feedback, our email address is info@techcentral.co.za, or even easier, send us a WhatsApp message or a voice note on 071-999-1111. We may include voice notes in this show, so please keep them coming. And that's it, Rechat. Until next week. Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.